Hey, I'm Mark Whittle.
And I'm Jay Morton.
And this is a four-part mini-series from Take Flight.
And today we're going to be talking about a topic that we've never spoken about before.
Let's get into it.
I'm Mark Whittle, former athlete and city worker turned life and performance coach. And this is the Take Flight podcast. We talk with the greatest minds and performers in the world and understand what it takes to reach your fullest potential and be unapologetically you. If you're finished with conforming to societal norms, done with being told who to be, and ready to take your own life into your hands, subscribe to this channel to hear the most unique conversations and be prepared to be enlightened, educated, and empowered. Our goal is simple: to support and help you navigate your own hero's journey. Enjoy our content, and when you're ready to go that step further, join our private or group coaching programs by inquiring at www.takeflightworld.com or by following me and DMing at markwhittle_TF. Fasten your seatbelt, it's time to take flight.
Mate, how are you doing?
I'm good. I mean, that's a big question to ask someone, but overall good. Trajectory is in the right direction.
Yeah.
Dealing with some things. Mm-hmm. Yourself?
I'm good as well, yeah. I think we've spoken a lot in the last couple of weeks. I'm excited to do this. We'll explain a little bit more about why. Mm-hmm. And yeah, mate, I wouldn't want to be here with anyone else, so I'm excited, a little nervous.
Yeah, it's a change. It's different, right? Mm-hmm. It's different from, I guess, the output that you're used to operating on. It's mm-hmm. it's a different approach, but I think a much needed one.
Yeah, 100%. That's why I'm so excited, but fearful at the same time. So, little bit of context. So for me, I want to hear your context in the shift as well. Mm-hmm. What caused you to message me a couple of weeks ago? But the last 7 or 8 months, I haven't recorded anything because there's a couple of reasons really, but the podcast was so good to me and it allowed me to leave the corporate world and build a foundation for me, really, from a brand perspective and also from a growth perspective. Like, I've met so many people. It was amazing. Great ride, great journey, number one show and all these external accolades that felt important. But two things happened. One, anyone else who runs a podcast knows it's a full-time job on its own. Mm. Like, it takes so much from the preparing to getting the guests to thinking about the conversation and getting the questions right. And then you do your editing, you've got to manage, you've got to produce, you've got to get the clips, promote, market, all that stuff, sell the sponsorships, which was like a full-time job as well. So there was that side of things. And I was just purely called to the coaching to develop myself there and service my clients as best as I could. And there's loads of stuff I've done on the side for that as far as education, like courses and stuff, which I won't go into now, but it was that side. And then there was the more industry side, and I was losing faith with what podcasting was becoming. Having been in it for such a long time, I've seen the industry change a lot to this more like marketing, clickbaity world, which like is a mirror of what we're going to talk about today. Right? There's less substance, less truth in a lot of the conversations. So just decided to not record anything until I felt there was something worth talking about. There was a subject that actually mattered, and then we'd start again. And cue your message.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I guess that leads me on to explaining what we're doing sat in this room at this big long table. Yeah, you know, it's interesting what you say about the podcast world and I guess what both brings us here is ultimately, I think we've both come to the realization, or I definitely come to the realization, that my energy and values in life have probably been in the wrong things. And yeah, it's a hard one to start, right? Because I don't know really where the story begins.
Or ends.
But I guess that through life, And I'm going to speak as me, because I equally think that we're all probably doing this right now, but I can only speak with my experience. I think through life you build up a version of yourself which you come to believe is the version that you are. Mm-hmm. And quite rightly so, right? Because for me, growing up as a child, I was probably quite insecure. I was shy. I was useless at speaking to people. I was useless at speaking to members of the opposite sex. And you build up this version of yourself that counteracts all that stuff. So I aim to be confident in life. I chose a career that made me feel seen and valued, and because, you know, the school system itself, it makes you, if you don't like sitting in a room and reading a book and writing stuff down on a piece of paper, then as a child you're seen to be thick or dumb.
Mm.
And no one ever teaches you that you've got skills and values in other things. The system's designed for you to go, you're not good at school, you're dumb, you're going to be useless when you go outside of school. And I think you feel that as a kid, and it really puts a value on your self-worth. And so do other things. How you grew up, the people you're around. So I think through life you build up this armor of who you should be in the world, because the version that you were as a kid, or the version that you actually are, doesn't feel good enough or doesn't feel worthy. And mine was Jay the Special Forces soldier, right? He was the guy that climbed Everest. He was the guy on TV. He was the, you know, smashing it in the mountains, racing cars, you know, getting his knee down on a motorbike, healthy, fit, confident, all those things. And all those things still are me. They are some amazing characteristics that I've built up around myself because of insecurities or things that have happened in the past. But there's a whole other side of me that you suppress and you push down and you don't want to accept about yourself. And they come out in situations and circumstances. And for me, they came out quite recently. And it took pain for me to ultimately look inside and ask myself some very, very hard questions about this stuff. And as kooky as it sounds, people will say it's the universe telling you that it's trying to show you, right, so that you can live a fulfilled life. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's your soul. Maybe it's whatever it is. But we end up setting patterns in life and doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I believe we're completely oblivious to it. And the subconscious mind is running the show, the chimp mind, or whatever you want to call it. But you keep doing these same patterns, and it keeps putting you in the same situation. And for me, I never learned, because I thought I was this guy that climbs Everest, that's in the Special Forces, all that stuff. And I use the term perfect, but completely not. Mm-hmm. But I thought I had my shit squared. And it took one of the patterns I have, which is, you know, emotionally not being there in a relationship and shutting down. It took fucking pain for me to go, all right, I'm the problem here, right? I'm the reason that I keep getting myself into this situation over and over again in relationships, romantic ones, But equally, it then opens the door for you to say, where else am I doing this pattern? Mm. Where else am I holding myself back? Where else do I not feel like I'm enough? Or where else do I feel like I'm not worthy or not lovable? Or I think that something's wrong with me. Like, where else is this showing up in my life? And actually, when you look at it, you go, fuck, it's like all over the place. Yeah. Which equally is the greatest gift that I've probably ever been given in my life, because now I know what pulls me back from starting a business. Now I know why I don't speak up about what I want in a relationship. Now I know why I've been held back in life.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the conscious decision to now take action. But before that, you didn't, right? You're on autopilot. You're just swimming through life and everything's fucking great and amazing. And I'm climbing mountains and had a wicked time in the Special Forces. And I'm like, I'm fucking great. I'm having the best time ever. But I kept doing the same thing in relationships.
And under the surface, something...
Under the surface, it caused me extreme pain. And I was never introspective enough to learn that shit. And now I am. So, yeah, I'd just come out of therapy, as in I'd just had a session. And I think I messaged you about doing a podcast. And we jumped on a call. And I think the call lasted for about an hour. And it was like we were speaking the same language.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how we got to sit in this table in front of each other.
Yeah, amazing, mate. Okay. And so the context is, of course, like the work that I do with my clients, like my business, my world is just is completely immersed with this now, which it always starts with the self. So looking at ourselves and the introspection, which is the scary thing to do. And even the questions you're asking, mate, like, or you're even alluding to, are the courageous questions to ask.
Courage
is the it's the key to freeing yourself from a lot of the stuff that sits underneath the surface. And so we spoke, and just as well, like, if I could just say, I get about at least one message a week from someone saying, can I come on the podcast? But obviously, since we did the last one, which was what, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
And stayed in touch since then.
Yeah.
I've seen you at a lot of the Through Dark events, and we've generally stayed in touch, messaged, like, sliding the DMs.
Yeah.
And we had dinner in London, like, in the summer or something. I think it was in the summer, wasn't it?
Yeah. Not long ago.
Yeah. So we've always had a friendship anyway, but then you don't know what's going on really in that person's life. So as soon as we got on the phone and we were speaking the same language, it was like, fuck.
Yeah.
I'm so aligned with what you're talking about. And likewise, I've been on a very similar transformational journey for like 6 years, but then weirdly the timing was the major thing happened to me like 5 weeks ago, which is right in line with what you were going through as well. So I suppose we both wanted to come and speak the truth.
Yeah, I think it's, I felt like all the podcasts that I'd done previously, I was operating on a version of Jay that's not entirely... I mean, it is me, it's part of me, but there's like so much more to that.
Yeah.
And I've, you know, even with the topic of mental health, I think I always pushed it away and always ignored it and just said, you know, when someone had asked me on a podcast about mental health, I used to say, keep fit, speak to mates.
Yeah.
The generic shit that at that moment in time, I thought was good for your mental health, which they are. But I think now I have a completely different perspective on mental health and what it is. And I think a lot of our conversations recently have been around, like, I can't help but think of the, you know, the feelings and like the emotions that we go through as a human being that we potentially suppress.
Mm.
Especially as men, we suppress these emotions, right? Society tells us that we should be focusing on positive emotions. And I think over time as a man, you generally learn to suppress and ignore the negative ones.
Yeah.
Up until something fucking hurts.
You don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And the old me would have distracted myself with alcohol, with gym, with running, with, dare I say it, chasing more women.
Right? Yeah.
To validate my sense of worth when actually my sense of worth has to come from me. And what's been liberating over the last 4 or 5 weeks has been sitting with these emotions,
yeah,
these painful emotions. And I've come to the realization that I've probably never felt them before.
Yeah.
Or if I have, I've tried to ignore them. And I feel like as men, we don't sit with our negative emotions, and we try and ignore them because it can be scary. Especially if you've never felt it.
Yeah, and let's be honest as well. Like, when we're talking on the phone, we were saying we're fearful of being vulnerable today.
Yeah, I am now.
Yeah.
I'm listening to my voice going, what are you talking about? And like the old Jay, I was saying to you on the phone, yeah, the old Jay's like trying to pull me come back in, here, speak about the mountains.
Quick, talk about Everest.
Yeah.
But like, look, let's just be super direct, right? So what we're talking about here is we have a choice as a man, but also as a person, to lock up our traumas, lock up our wounds and all the negative things that have happened to us and shove them in a box and push them down and fucking put a smile on our face and just march on. And with that, often what happens is you look to the external world as a crutch, and you have, for me, it was the sport, football, then it was making money, and likewise relationships or anything else that you felt was important, materialism, like social media, getting another guest on the podcast, all these things started to feed into that external validation, that need and the crutch, which allowed me to continue to bury. Or we have a choice to do the courageous thing, the more difficult path, which is open the box, Pandora's box that we were talking about, which we can't ever close it again. The work appears to never stop anyway at the moment. And face your demons, face those traumas, face those difficult things that have happened. And like, if I was to speak on a sort of, I speak with clients and stuff, I say, give me the headline of that. So we don't have to go into the depth too much. But if I spoke on as a headline, I've spoke about it maybe once or twice. I've mentioned it on the podcast, dipped my toe in on how it would feel to be vulnerable and tell the truth. It's like, ah, retreat, but...
That's your version of vulnerability in that moment. It's not true vulnerability.
No.
That's your version of it, isn't it?
And it was, how painful was it to do it then, though?
And then you ask yourself, why are you doing it? Why are you doing it on the podcast at that moment? What's your goal in?
I was trying to free myself. If I just put it out there like that, then I can go, that's it. Okay. What does everyone think of me now? No one cares.
No one gives a shit.
No one cares.
Hopefully. We will see.
The next sort of dipping my toe in was speaking about it at festivals on stages to people who I didn't know, which I found easier, and that was liberating because I could speak about it live to people and I could watch the reactions. And I actually spoke with a lot of people who were in the audience afterwards who had similar stories. So for context, I was it's even hard to say it, but like, I was essentially left as a 5-month-old by my biological dad. And I was brought up by my mum and then who she then partnered with, who's my dad, who brought me up from 6 months old, who was my hero. Likewise, my mum, both my heroes, my little brother, who's my best friend in the world. And we had this amazing Disneyland upbringing of like travels, really close, tight knit family, like so much love there. But something wasn't spoken about. I was told at 3 years old, I don't remember being told, I just remember at some stage knowing that I had a biological dad who lived out there. And what happens when, well, two things happen. One, when you feel a certain way about something, which I did, which was negative, it was like I felt bad, I felt grief, I felt loss, actually. But the people around you, particularly the adults, don't look or appear to be feeling the same. Mm-hmm. Then you make yourself wrong for feeling like that. So I felt like the grief was wrong. I'm feeling the wrong way about this, which then puts your whole like understanding of who you are into question. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is the silence is the thing that kills you, because then you just make up your own stories about it. So to cut a long story short, I've been on this journey of coming to terms with that, coming to peace with that, accepting that. And part of that involved firstly meeting my biological dad, which was last year. And then this year, flying to South Africa where he lives and meeting his family, which included my half brother and half sister. So it's just been this insane, crazy journey of like courage, truly facing the thing that I'd ran from my whole life. Like I was sitting on this 12-hour flight, night flight, all the way there, just, well, the first thing that came to mind was, fucking hell, how many times have I done this? I moved to Canada, did a snowboard season before I went to university, flew on my own to this, you know, that's courage in its own form. Mm-hmm. At a young age, didn't know anyone. Moved to America, flying there on my own, into these unknown situations, unknown worlds, unknown lives on the other side, other experiences there. And it just made me think, like, everything has led to this moment. Mm-hmm. Everything I've thrown myself into, everything I've experienced has led to me to be able to cope with the feelings that are coming up now, as well as all the therapy, all the conversations and every other aspect of growth I've had. But from there it was a very special week, transformational week, incredible week. But the point isn't really what happened. The point is how I dealt with it and who I became on the other side. And that's where we were aligned with a similar story for yourself, like how we grew up, how we made us an image of ourselves and tried to live up to that. For me, it was on the football field and then later on in the corporate world. And for you, it was in the forces and then later on with this fame that we'll talk about as well, like being on TV, SAS Udairs wins. So I suppose with that is just, where do you resonate with that? And then you share as much as you want on your side.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How did grief and loss show up in your body and mind? Because I think having recently felt grief and loss, I'm also relearning how these emotions show up in our body.
Well, fucking hell, mate. Didn't ask her. You see what?
But like if I never had gone through, you know, the immense pain,
yeah,
I wouldn't know what they show up like, yeah, in your body.
Well, first of all, it didn't, because I learned to switch it off, mm-hmm, and numb it and pretend it wasn't there. But then what happens then is you deny a part of yourself and a part of your truth. So when people talk about being your true self, that's what it really means, is accepting every version of yourself, like, and all the pain that comes with that, and all the ups and all the great things, all the amazing experiences you were talking about, Everest and all that, still a part of us. All the amazing things I've done, is whether driven from pain or pleasure, like, it's still a part of us. But I learned to switch it off, and then I think it showed up, or it manifested in weird places, because it was abandonment. The grief was from abandonment. It would show up in places where it's weird things, mate. Like if someone didn't message me back.
Yeah.
That felt like loss or grief.
Wow.
And then that would turn into like anger. And it happened more with men, because mine was
your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would show up in like in the corporate, it would show up if I didn't get the deal and they didn't sign the contract, and then it would turn to anger.
Yeah.
It showed up in sport if I got put on the bench. Oh, if you put me on the bench, I was fuming, or took me off.
Yeah.
If you took me off the pitch and subbed me off, like in moments like that. And at the time, you just think, you're a victim, because at some stage in your life, you have been a victim. But then as you grow up, you need to realize, unless you let that go, you're always going to feel like the victim.
And what triggered the awareness of that? Because equally, if I look back into my own life, and I know that there was a big part of me that was emotionally shut down, you know, probably through being raised as a child, right?
And yeah.
Nothing against my parents, I love them dearly, but things happen, and you know, that doesn't mean that they didn't do their best. I think the special forces and the military completely shuts you off emotionally.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, you're exposed to a lot of stuff that normal people aren't exposed to. And in those moments, emotion is pretty useless. So I only realized recently, looking back retrospectively on all those moments, did I have the awakening of, that all makes sense now. I've been shutting off emotionally throughout my whole life. And as much as that is a gift from your body, because your nervous system and your body just goes, I don't want you to get hurt, mate. So I'm going to do this, because we've been hurt all the time. Every time that you showed vulnerability, or every time you spoke up, like you got hurt. So let's not do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And you build a pattern. And because we don't have anyone to compare ourselves to, right? I don't know that my operating system is, I'm not even going to say flawed, because it's an operating system, because it's made us survive through walking out of caves to living in metropolises like London.
And let's be honest as well, like a lot of what we're talking about here is the nervous system and like the fight or flight response.
Yeah.
You are in fight, like you're in the special forces, you're on missions and operations where you're actually in survival, whereas a lot of the issues for the general public is that we're in that when there's no threat. But you lived through like very threatening situations. So it's no wonder that, like, of course you have to shut down your emotions and just be purely in that fight flight response.
Yeah. And maybe I was good at the job because of I learned how to shut my emotions out earlier on.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I managed to go through a 14-year career and never really have any levels of severe PTSD. I had mild PTSD, but I don't feel negatively affected from that. I don't have nightmares. I don't have, you know, and there's some people that struggle with that stuff. And for me, it's never been an issue. And maybe thanks to my shutting down, it, you know, that helped me through that stage.
Has this new courage that you found to go inside, go introspective, like brought up old memories that you're like, whoa.
Yeah, no. I think that they're that old right now that I'm probably less scared of them.
Okay.
And know that I don't mind facing them. And having sat through a lot of negative emotion recently, I know that the only thing that would come from them is an emotion. And as a good friend of mine and doctor in psychology said, the word emotions just motion with an E on the end. That our emotions are in motion.
Energy in
motion. And I think that's why people get scared of negative emotion, because you feel like you're going to get stuck in negative emotion. But the whole emotion system is a system, right? It's supposed to regulate. And it's the same as crying. The reason we cry is our bodies need to expel the energy or the stress or the emotion that's built up, and it needs a release, and crying gives that release. And I've probably cried more in my life in the last few weeks than I ever have in my life.
I want to talk to you about that, mate. I think the challenge is that people think that they are the emotion.
Yeah.
So when you're in that 100%. Sadness, then you think that's you, where it's not. You're
feeling it.
You're feeling it. Yeah. You're the thing behind the emotion, but you're experiencing the emotion. Mm. And it's fluid, and it's can be temporary, but it certainly passes, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing.
It usually does. Like, the amount of shit moods I've been in, and I've just gone, you're in a shit mood, yeah?
Mm.
And I've sat with it and not judged it, owned it, and journaled about it, whatever you want to do. But trying to deny it or suppress it or be under the illusion that you shouldn't be feeling it is going to make it worse.
What was your trigger for the awareness?
Pain. Yeah, pain through relationships, our relationship. I've never gone through anything like that my whole life, and it was an eye opener. It just made me ask some serious questions about, because I couldn't, for the love of God, figure out how I got into that situation. And I couldn't, for the love of God, figure out why I acted the way I acted in that situation. And I guess that led me onto a path of trying to understand it better. Mm. And I guess through that, I got a therapist and a relationship coach. And yeah, through that, you come to realize that you set patterns in relationships, all relationships, not just romantic and friendships. And my pattern was, I was never vulnerable. I was always a people pleaser. I always wanted the relationship to be amazing and feel great, and it should always be like at a 10, and we're having if we're not at a 10, then there's no love. And so I'd do everything that I needed to do to make sure that it's at a 10. And actually, it creates kind of a chaos in the relationship, but I was addicted to the chaos. I thought that was love, right? I thought that a feeling inside was love. And, you know, in fact, love is when you be vulnerable and share things that you don't want to share, right? That person annoyed you and you need to tell them that they annoyed you, because actually there's something underneath that, right? It might not be that you don't like them because they annoyed you. It might be that years ago in a playground, you said something or someone said something to you and that annoyed you. And unless you go on the journey of figuring out what that is, you're never going to find out what that is. I lack vulnerability, which forced me to never actually make a connection in a relationship, a proper connection. And then I got to a point in a relationship where I'd just be like, well, this isn't, you know, I don't feel it. I don't feel like we've got a good relationship. And I'd exit, because deep down, it's driven by fear. Fear that someone would love me. Fear that someone would love me for all the flaws and all the shit that you bring to a table. And it's not shit, right? It's part of you. It's you have to love that. I'm just using those words. But it all comes from fear. And we've had this conversation the last few days about, I believe the biggest driver in everyone's life is fear. I would, you know, not be open emotionally, because I equally didn't have that language inside me. Yeah. No one ever showed me what vulnerability looked like. No one ever showed me that you could make up from fighting. No one ever showed me how to. No one ever showed me that you can have these negative emotions and you're still you.
Yeah.
So that forced me to shut down when conflict and negative emotions arose, which again just means that you're not connecting truly in a relationship, which also adds to the fact that the relationship's not what you want it to be, and then you gives you more ammo in the bank to leave that relationship, and then that proves that you're not lovable and not worthy.
the happy merry-go-round goes on again.
And then the cycle continues, and the cycle continues, and the cycle continues until... Until you, the universe, your soul, or whatever, just goes, mate, you are doing the same thing over and over and over again. What do you want out of life? Mm. I want a fucking good relationship with people, with a romantic partner. And it's like, well, this will make you look inside yourself.
Yeah.
Pain.
What?
Fucking hell. That was...
That was amazing, mate. How are you feeling again out of the chest?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
What was the thing that scared you most about being loved?
Probably perfectionism, maybe. That I'm going to fuck up. I'm not going to get it right. I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it is at the core.
I have an idea.
Go on.
I don't want to project.
Do it. I'll tell you if it's true or false.
That the person who you will end up loving could leave you, which is linked to the childhood experiences.
Yeah. My therapist says the same.
Really?
It's one of those things as well, right? Because I don't feel like that. Deep down, I don't get in a relationship and go, one day that person's going to leave me. One day that person's going to leave me. But I equally don't think it works like that. I don't think that the subconscious mind works like that, because the subconscious mind is just, if you're operating in that, then it just feels normal.
Well, very rarely the subconscious mind is even words, right? Which is why it's so hard to understand.
Yeah.
It doesn't speak English.
Yeah, I mean, I would.
It's I
would agree.
It's in the behaviours, right?
Yeah. So well, like, you abandon yourself because they can't abandon you.
That's fucking it, mate. That's it. Yeah. And I've written in my journal, I can't even tell you how many times, I will no longer abandon myself.
Yeah.
In fact,
and self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. You go into a relationship and you tick all the boxes that your subconscious needs you to tick, and then you come out of it and prove your subconscious right that deep down you abandon yourself because the other person's just going to do it anyway.
And because ultimately we believe deep down that we are not enough.
Yeah.
So we abandon ourselves because we're clearly not enough.
Yeah.
So let's prove the fucking world wrong.
Yeah.
In my perfectionism, and I will be the best at everything, and I'll fucking show all of you that I'm the best, and then no one can argue with me.
But that's unsustainable.
It is completely unsustainable.
And it will drain you.
Man, I've made myself ill so many times on that merry-go-round.
Mm.
From chronic fatigue when I first moved back from America to burnout a number of times in the corporate world. And as much as fear, I was going to say this is one of the key teachings in the coaching stuff that I do, is like the two blocks in life is fear, which is like fucking everything we're talking about there. Like so encompasses so many things. And the other one's fatigue. But the fear drives the fatigue because you overwork yourself. There's this fundamental flaw that we think we need to do more to be more.
Yeah.
And everyone's living this thing of like, I get up and I'm going to choose to go on the tube every morning and stand next to everybody else and be squashed in and rush into the office and then sit there and I'm going to do something that somebody else tells me to do. Because if I do that thing someone else tells me to do, then I'll get a raise or I'll get a promotion and then I'm seen as enough. Then the world's telling me I'm doing okay and I'm going to play by somebody else's rules. It's this fucking crazy world that's telling us to be something that we aren't.
It's society, right? But actually, where does being enough come from?
Childhood.
Well, no, where does actually, you've just explained that we seek out things that make us feel enough when actually feeling enough needs to come from inside, from yourself.
The irony that
it's mad because you have because it kind of doesn't exist, the feeling of not being enough or being enough. It doesn't exist because it's a self-imposed thing, because you're ultimately you.
Mm.
But the ego, the subconscious mind, tries to add all these things on as distractions from you just being you. So it'll chase Everest, it'll chase a career in the special forces, which are great. They're, you know, good career paths. They're achievements in life. They're ultimately some things I'm really proud of. And I'm still going to chase them because that's me and that's my identity. But recently I had to ask myself the questions of why I chose them. And that might have not been a healthy path. Healthy path. Whereas now I go, you know, I'm going to go and climb Everest again next year. Why am I doing it? I'll tell you why I'm doing it. Because I get so much joy from being on that mountain. And I love showing people that who come on expeditions and looking after them and making sure they're safe in what they might see as a dangerous environment.
And the
freedom. And I get a kick from that.
The beauty in coming to an expedition or an adventure from that perspective and that intention for you and to show other people what's available in life versus to keep filling up the bucket of this persona of Jay Morton. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, I think social media is ultimately driving.
It is.
All our insecurities.
It's sad, mate. I took 5 weeks off of social media, actually over the period as well that I was in South Africa. I'm a different person when I'm off it. Because I'm aware of the wounds I incurred in my youth that drive those behaviours. So it's not a good thing for me. I've got to be really careful with it. I don't know whether you feel the same. I've got to be super careful with how frequently I go on it, how I use it. And I worry for the generation that's growing up, who have grown up with it from the ages of like 10, 11, whereas I got it when I was like 20. Anyway, that's a side note. The thing I wanted to sort of, because we're obviously going to do a few conversations. We're going to do two today. Some of the stuff you were talking about with love, like I think is so amazing that you're talking about that openly. It's incredibly powerful, and I know a lot of people will get a lot from that. But it links so closely into what we started talking about at the beginning, which is vulnerability. And the thing, when we're talking about the trigger for building the awareness, the thing for me was when my daughter was born. And she's taught me so much. I saw her starting to, I saw myself starting to behave in ways that I wasn't proud of, like getting super angry.
With her?
She was a newborn, but like I wasn't coping with it.
Okay.
And I was like, how am I? I've always wanted to be a dad. I've always subconsciously, because of what happened, I've always subconsciously thought about how I can build this safe structure, have some security before I bring a baby into the world.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't coping with it emotionally. I had the house, I had all the other stuff that I thought was important, but then I wasn't able to emotionally cope with when she was upset. And she had a really difficult first 6 months, milk allergies, colic, and still doesn't sleep. She's like 3.5. So all this stuff was going on. And I just started to see the behaviors in myself, and it got to the point again, driven by pain, when I was like, I can't keep up this false persona, this false perfectionism anymore. Because I'm being shown in my face that I'm not perfect.
Yeah. And that's okay.
And that's okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to be perfect. I have not got any of it figured out.
And you want to teach that to your daughter.
Exactly. And that was it. And I was like, I can't fake this anymore because she'll know. And she was knowing. She was showing me at 3 a.m. in my face, screaming at me, you can't do this, mate. And that's all right. You've got to figure it out. And that's what triggered me to reply to an email I'd received a couple of years before, which at the time I wasn't willing to entertain. Again, with my daughter, though, like the vulnerability thing is, even now, and I'm trying my hardest, if I am super tired, again, the fatigue thing, I'll drop back into some old patterns. It's just so easy to do that day to day. Like, you've got to be really careful with how you balance your energy. But when I make mistakes, which I inevitably do, there's this idea called rupture and repair. So you rupture something, and I remember like getting up in the night of a few months back, and she just was refusing to go to bed, and I was just so tired, and I just punched the ground, not proud of it at all. And I saw her face change, like, I feel like she almost felt scared, and it makes me feel awful to feel like, because that's the last feeling I want her to feel. Yeah, me. But then it all settled down, and I couldn't sleep. I felt terrible. And in the morning, I was like, Lyra, you remember last night? She goes, yeah, I shouted at you. But actually what happened was I hit the floor first and then she screamed in my face. But that was her reaction to it. And I said, I'm so sorry if I made you feel scared or anything like that. Like, you're safe. I love you. I'm really sorry for doing that. And she just looked at me in my eyes and said, that's okay, Dad. And I was like, oh, fuck it. I was like nearly crying. But that's the repair bit. And that was the courageous bit, because I was upset with myself for doing it. Mm. Then you've got to revisit it and be vulnerable and be like, you know that thing that I did, which I'm fucking so upset that I did. And it might seem minor, but there's things like this in everyone's life that's happening all the time. You might beep someone in your car, like road rage or whatever, or you say something you don't mean to your partner, or you, I don't know, you just do something that's you're not proud of. And that's okay, because you're either tired and you drop into the ego, all these patterns show up and manifest in different ways, and you're not being who you want to be. That's fine. But then what are you going to do to change it? Like, then you have to go and be vulnerable and relive it and go, show yourself, this is me, I'm so sorry. Like, that's not who I want to be, I didn't mean it, I'm really sorry. And that's the repair bit, for both of you.
Yeah, how good is it that you're able to teach your daughter that at such a young age as well, right? Because you being vulnerable and apologising to your daughter has taught her that, you know, you can make mistakes, you can get angry. We're allowed to get angry. There's nothing wrong with getting angry. And you see a consequence that potentially you've emotionally hurt your daughter, mm-hmm. and you've stepped forward and apologized for that. And that's a great, you know, I'm not a parent yet. So I found it hard to, because I see how hard being a parent is. But equally, like, I think we're so fixated on teaching them, you know, the right lessons of, and again, because society focuses so heavily on the positives, right?
Mm.
The lessons that are positive, but you also have to teach them how to repair an argument, and they need to see you argue and then make up afterwards and be in love. And that's more important for me, because that's the stuff that is gonna be a decider whether they have a good relationship when they're older or not.
Yeah. So how though, Mr. Special Forces, fighting, mountain climbing.
That's me. Absolutely perfect.
But there's people listening to this with their own version of that, right? Whether you're the Mr. Entrepreneur, Mr. Athlete, Mr. Whatever, who's, and there's an element of truth to it, right? But then there's also your other truths that you can free yourself from when you accept it. How do you go on the journey of being vulnerable? You've had lots of these conversations of late, mate. I'd love to, I want to hear, like, how are you preparing yourself to go into those vulnerable moments, whether it's conversations or the journaling you're doing? Because that's powerful, what we were talking about yesterday or last week, I think that was. What are you doing? Because that's the fear. You're going back into these old wounds and this old pain, and you're having to bring it back up again. It's like, wow, it's the hard work.
I haven't got a choice. Is the answer. It's easy to go back into the old habits of just everything's great. Gonna go and climb mountains. But I don't want to live like that. I want to connect properly, and I want people to see me for who I am, and I want to be proud of that. And the only way of doing that is doing all the things that I didn't do previously. So, it's at the minute, it's a change and it's a shift. And I think we get so much value from these hard conversations. And it's bizarre how it's like this resistance or this pull that just goes, you don't have to have that conversation. Like, just smooth everything over. Yeah. 2 weeks' time, you'll have forgotten about it. But, like, the nervous system and the body just doesn't forget. It goes, yeah, you just proved all that stuff that you actually deep down subconsciously think about yourself right.
Yeah.
And it just adds and adds and adds. So to answer your question, I haven't got a choice. I've got to have these conversations. And I've got to get help for that because I need to reteach myself how to do this. And then practice it and get better at it. And it doesn't get easy. It's actually harder, but it's the right path if I want to not hold myself back from having the things that I actually want in my life, because the old operating system was not getting me what I wanted in life, in business, in friendships, in relationships. And, you know, it's time for a software upgrade.
Yeah, amazing. It's funny, mate, when I got back from South Africa, the people it was important for me to share the experience with would ask me questions. And obviously it was quite literal for them because it wasn't their experience and the things that they were worried about. It was bringing up their fears and their questions. But I said a similar thing. It's like, for I don't have a choice. This was my path and always has been my path, and it was always going to happen as long as I was prepared to listen to the call to do it. But also, it's so much bigger than me. Like, the...
So much bigger than you.
It, all of
so
it, right?
Much bigger than you. This is... For you, we're talking in 100 years, you've made a change.
Yeah.
You've broken. And not that that's going to be interrupted down the line, but for you now, for your children, for their children, this is so much bigger than you.
And for you, right?
Yeah, potentially.
But this is what, but you know.
But yeah.
We have this, we're sitting down in 20 years. It's so much bigger than both of us.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling that I got when I was there, is like, all I'm doing is parking my ego to sit in this discomfort and understand and get deeper awareness of all of this stuff. So A, I can feel a bit better about it, but B, I can become a better person to pass this stuff on to other people. I actually feel lucky that this has been my journey.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who have trauma and stuff, they can't go and have a conversation with someone to free themselves from that, because that helped a lot. I wonder about people who perhaps have a similar story and people have passed away and it's not, there's no tangible conversation to have. Or people have worse traumas and that's what they've got to confront. And fucking hell, I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
And so I feel quite lucky in that sense. But it's a duty. In the same way that yours is like, it's a duty both to you, it's a duty to your future partner, whoever that is. It's a duty to the other friendships and relationships that you've got to enrich in those as well. I don't know if you resonate with that or not, but it just feels so much bigger.
Yeah. I mean, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I've done some hard stuff, and it's bizarre that you would think that this is harder than any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And it, looking back retrospectively, you know, I've lived in my comfort zone for so long, and that's, you know, an outsider looking in would go, what? You've lived out of your comfort zone for so long, but
Everest was your comfort zone.
Comfort zone.
Yeah.
Hands down. Physical pain, no fucking drama.
Crazy.
You know, that kind of stuff. No drama. Because it equally plays into my ego and it defines me as self-worthy in society. So I'll do that all day. Don't mind that. Special forces, don't mind that. Being vulnerable.
Well, yeah. You're started, mate, today. Yeah. Both are. We're doing this together. This is why I love this so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's hard. And we're both... It's still very raw for both of us as well. But I think I think that's a good thing. We might listen back to this. I know we're planning to listen to it together when we get back from Kenya in a few weeks. We might listen back to this and be like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, edit it all out. Let's do another podcast.
Talk about Everest.
Talk about coaching, high performance. I'll talk about business, Everest. Yeah, most likely. So this may never go out.
Well, we're going to do another one.
Yeah.
We're just coming up to the hour. So it's probably been a lot for people. If you're listening to this, like, thanks for sticking with us. But this is it for me.
Yeah, it's a lot for me.
But this is life. Like, what else is there? To understand ourselves and to really have awareness of the things that are going to trip us up. Because the only person that, it's like the Scooby-Doo, right? And Shaggy catches the killer at the end or whatever, and he lifts the mask off, and it's him.
Yeah,
he's just looking at himself. It's like, oh, and that's what everyone's doing to themselves. It's just in some roundabout way, it's like tripping themselves up, getting in their own way.
Yeah, it just rings a bell of what you said before about you go out to dinner and you sit around a load of people and you feel like you don't resonate or connect, and you just sat there and you go all quiet, and then you slowly realize that everyone else is just in their own heads, living out their own life through whatever experiences that they've lived through in the past. And we all are.
Yeah. Use this analogy of the rungs on the ladder. Like, not to say you're better than anyone, but when you're going on this journey of growth, personal development, you climb up this ladder of consciousness, and then you can't resonate on the same frequency as other people unless they're climbing their ladder as well, which is obviously when we have that conversation, we are just vibrating at the same frequency.
Yeah.
So we're lucky to have each other and friends who are like that as well, that we can talk about this stuff with, because it is fucking hard. We talked about loneliness as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my relationship coach said to me the other day, loneliness is... The cure of loneliness is loneliness. And I was like, you got a point there, haven't you? He's like, if you're ever feeling lonely, just sit in the loneliness. He's like, then you've given it a companion. It's never lonely ever again. And it's true. And I have to counter it with saying that I don't feel lonely. But yeah, it's, I think, you just got to own these feelings and negative emotions and learn to understand them. And I think if you give them power, they'll dominate your life. But if you take that power away and use them as your power, then, you know, the world's ahead of you.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more, mate. So we're going to go get some food.
Let's do it.
Have a break.
Yeah.
Talk about climbing mountains and...
Yeah, delete this podcast.